If you freaking don't want to fight, then you freaking might as well stop right now. Are you going to stop fighting? You're behind in this fight. Damn it. Take this. You're behind in this fight. You're not listening. You got 12 minutes left. That's 4 rounds. What you do in the next 12 minutes, you're going to have to live with for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years of your life. Your little son, he's not going to be told that his son beat Holyfield. He's going to be told he beat thoughts to a guy named Bolter. Who was brought up with no talent. You understand? Anything you feel, he's feeling the same, but worse. You're just not digging. You hear me? And you can't talk about all the things you talk about if you don't perform. Now listen, do you want to live with that the rest of your life?
No.
Michael, it's going to happen. You got 12 minutes. You're behind. You understand? It's going to start here.
Yes, yes. You're rocking with just Brendo. No Paz, no Billy. Solo Brendo on this mission tonight. Knock Him Out the Box, episode 71. I am the only host of this show tonight. There is no co-host. It's just me, the host with the most. 71. For those of our Spanish-speaking brethren, I always do the translation of the episode number. Here we are, episode 71, Knock Him Out of the Box. Brendan by himself on a solo mission. I hope you guys stick with me, rock with me. We're in for a good show tonight. I just want to shout out my partner, Vinny, my other partner, Billy. I hope both of you guys feel better. Both guys couldn't make it tonight, but I'm here. I'm carrying the torch. I'm making this thing go. So let's dive right into it. We got some big news in the heavyweight division. Deontay Wilder and Jilil Zhang, Big Bang Zhang, apparently have made a fight for June 1st, which is odd because Joseph Parker had a rematch clause with Zhang. It looks like Parker is out of the mix, which something tells me that we'll get an announcement in the coming weeks that we'll see Anthony Joshua and maybe Joseph Parker in a fight. I think it's probably a great doubleheader. It sets the table. If Deontay Wilder can get through Zhang, if Zhang can get through Deontay Wilder, one of those guys will get AJ, Anthony Joshua. Joshua really just staying busy and taking the fights. These are not super fights, but he's not wasting any time waiting around for the likes of a Tyson Fury or an Oleksandr Usyk, who will likely be locked in to two fights, where it looks like we're going to get Joshua again, and it looks like we're going to get Joshua with Joseph Parker, which would be a rematch. Joshua in 2018 defeated Parker via unanimous decision. It wasn't a controversial fight. It wasn't particularly close from what I remember. But here we go again. Parker, I think, has had a career renaissance. He's gotten a lot better. Two big wins in a row against Big Bang Zhang, big punchers in Big Bang Zhang and Deontay Wilder, who will now face each other, which is an interesting fight. When we get closer to it, which it's going to happen June 1st, we'll do the breakdown and the analytics on it. But this is something that could be fun for the fans, fun for, especially if you're there live, because it's hopefully it would end in a knockout. Zhang is a pretty big puncher. Obviously, we saw him just decimate and decapitate Joe Joyce. Wilder, for his flaws, is equipped with a good chin. And of course, we all know Wilder's got a lethal right hand. Can he put that on Big Bang Zhang? Big Bang Zhang is a formidable opponent. He's a big guy. They don't call him Big Bang Zhang for no reason. He was 291 his last fight. Wilder has come in came in a bit heavier for the third Fury fight, and then was lighter for, I believe, Hellenius and his fight with Joseph Parker, which he looked awful in. Couldn't get off. To me, looked like somewhat, not necessarily a shot fighter, but a guy who can't pull the trigger anymore. So, yeah, I guess you could put him into the old shot fighter category, but we'll see. This is a good crossroads fight for both guys. It puts Zhang, again, like I said, likely in a fight with Anthony Joshua if he can get through Wilder. Well, both guys. I think this is the Anthony Joshua sweepstakes. That's how I should put it. It appears that this Turkey Alashiki is rewarding Joseph Parker for two big wins in Saudi with what will appear to be an Anthony Joshua fight. I don't think Eddie Hearn has commented on it yet, who is Anthony Joshua's promoter. They obviously haven't made a formal announcement, but I can't imagine why Joseph Parker would be left out if he's coming off of two wins. Doesn't make sense. It's not something that we often see, and it's certainly not something that we would expect, especially since, like I said, he's looked great, and he's done nothing wrong to put himself out of favor with anybody. He's fighting the fights that we want to see, and he's improving with each fight. So cheers to all those guys. I mean, Vinny's predicted, and I don't disagree with him, that the next time we saw Wilder in a fight with a live body, not Robert Hellenius, Wilder would get knocked out. He didn't get knocked out in either fight, but he looked particularly bad against Joseph Parker. Joseph Parker had the right game plan. I don't think that Zhang is athletic enough to implement the same game plan, but Zhang is heavier handed than Parker, and naturally bigger. He's 6'6". Wilder's listed at 6'7". They're going to be evenly matched on height, and Zhang is going to be much heavier. So should be interesting. Clash of styles. But both guys, again, both heavy-handed guys, one big guy, one lighter, both tall. Could be fireworks on June 1st in Saudi Arabia. Speaking of the Saudis and Turki Alashiki, David Benavidez made a plea to Turkey and said, you know, put up the bread or whatever for the Canelo fight. I'll donate my share. I just want the glory. But if Canelo needs $150 million to get into the ring, would you be able to do it? And the response was, I'd rather make, since you're fighting at light heavyweight, against Gvozdik, I'd rather see you fight the winner of Better BFB Vol for light heavyweight supremacy. I'll make that fight. So I don't know if Benavidez's plea to Alashiki backfired, or Alashiki is just saying, Canelo's so difficult to deal with, why don't we just leave him in the dust and, you know, you can chase greatness here. Obviously we all want to see Benavidez and Canelo mix it up. That's this year's Spence Crawford. That's the Mayweather Pacquiao of 2024, if you will. This is the fight that the casuals want to see. This is the fight that the hardcores want to see. This is the fight that the lapsed fans want to see. This is the fight that the new fans want to see. These fights are inherently hard to make, these super fights. They shouldn't be, but they are. I like Alashiki's approach, and he says, hey, look, there's a great fight out there that is going to be great for your legacy. We'll sell great. We'll give you leverage if you eventually want to make a Canelo fight. But right now, he's too difficult to deal with. This is my takeaway from it. He's too difficult to deal with. why don't we just go ahead and do this? I agree with him. I'd love for Benavidez at this point to, and I've stated, I don't necessarily know how authentic these deals are that Benavidez and his team keep presenting. They don't appear to be authentic. They don't appear to be anything more than just social media chatter to bolster his sort of reputation that I'm not ducking and Canelo's ducking and besmirches Canelo. And that's how you get Canelo. It's not how you get Canelo in the ring. So I still am confident that we see Canelo and Benavidez in September. I think that'll be the fight. I think that fight's going to get made. A lot of people say that I'm crazy, but I have a feeling that's the fight that'll happen. That's the fight that's going to get made. That's the fight that people want to see. And when the fighters, the promoters, social media, when they keep throwing all this stuff in the mix, it builds the anticipation for the fight. And again, if the fight is made, it'll be a massive, massive, massive fight. I'm not going to tell you who I think is going to win at this point. If that fight gets made, we'll save that for the show. However, this is great. If that fight doesn't happen, and this is the consolation prize that boxing fans get, which would be a unifier with Benavidez, Beterbiev, or Bivol. For the record, I'm picking Beterbiev in the Beterbiev Bivol fight. And again, we'll get to that when that fight nears. We'll give a full breakdown analysis. I mean, we're going to talk a lot about that, and we'll talk a lot about it leading up. Benavidez, Beterbiev, or Bivol would be a great fight. I don't think Benavidez is in bad fights. He makes fights interesting. Big guy. It's going to fit in really well at 175. And if he wants to take the baton, snatch the torch, do what he's got to do, and reign supreme at 175 pounds, who better to do it against than Beterbiev or Bivol? Which, again, if he does decide to do that, I personally think it'll be against Beterbiev. We haven't heard any statements from Beterbiev or Bivol in regards to this, but it doesn't matter. This is what is being presented. This is what's being put on the table. And right now, the Saudis have a lot of money that they're willing to put up. These guys are prize fighters, and they'll fight for the biggest prize. I don't care how, how honorable they may say they are, but look, at the end of the day, these guys are fighting for, it's a short, relatively short career. They're fighting for their families and they're fighting for their future. So if someone's going to put up big money for these guys to lose brain cells, trust me, they're going to take it, and we'll enjoy it either way. Some news that's not so surprising. Terrence Crawford is likely to face the Tim Tszyu Sebastian Fundora match, which is happening on Saturday, the 30th, which I'm going to cover here on this show, Knock Him Out the Box, a little later in the show. It looks like Crawford's done with 147 pounds. So any of the boots talk, I know everybody wants to see it. I know you guys want to see it. I think that's, you guys got to move on from that. I like the fight. I'm thinking it's going to be Tim Tszyu. Again, after you hear my picks, you'll see why. But apparently the negotiations are already underway. And it looks like this will likely air on this PBC Prime platform. So we're going to see how that performs. Someone will release numbers, which PBC famously and rarely released pay-per-view numbers. And if they did, they were sort of suspect often. So we'll see what these numbers do. We'll see if Prime is happy with it. And then I think we'd go from there. But I mean, I like the fight. Again, talk to some people, they don't like the fight. Tim Tszyu, Terrence Crawford. I mean, Tszyu and Fundora just became a unifier. So WBC and the WBO belts are at stake here on Saturday. So Crawford, if he faces Zou, this would be a title fight. Or if he faces Fedora, what am I talking about? If he faces either one of these guys, the winner of this fight, Terrence Crawford will be not, he'll be a unified champ. If he wins, he'd be a unified champ in his fourth division. So he's obviously paving his way for Canastota, which is where the Hall of Fame is, to go in as a four division unified champ, which is pretty crazy. And if he hangs around 54, I'm sure he would go for undisputed. It's just my thoughts. Again, I don't think you can, I don't see how you hate the trajectory. I guess if you really want to see him in there with boots, then you hate this trajectory. I don't hate this trajectory, but I'm a Terrence Crawford mark. So he's paid his dues long enough. He's fought everybody again. He switched networks, went over to PBC to fight Errol Spence, destroyed Errol Spence, even though Errol Spence's fans still don't want to understand or recognize that, which is weird to me. But here we are in 2024. We're approaching a year of Crawford's inactivity, which I don't like. But there's not much you can do about it if he had to wait around for this, for Spence. I don't like that he's going to wait around for Zou or Fedora to be ready after this Saturday. I don't know where that, excuse me, I don't know where that realistically puts anybody. Excuse me. Went down the wrong pipe. I don't know where that realistically puts the timeline. I would say somewhere maybe in the fall, late summer. They've staged big fights in August, kind of in a dead spot, right before football season starts and right before the MLB playoffs. But again, with streaming services, I think a lot of this stuff is the old school rules or old school way of doing these things with boxing, where they would strategically put big fights, like they put big fights oftentimes in May and early June because the NBA playoffs aren't really heating up yet. The NBA final, the hockey finals, and March Madness is over. So baseball's not, no one cares about baseball in the first half of the season. We're right outside of the window of the NBA finals and NCAA is done. So, I mean, even like last weekend, there was like one fight on. This weekend, it's going to pick up again. But these things, so I guess I'm answering my own question. I guess they do strategically still schedule boxing to avoid the, you know, the major sports. But I don't have a problem seeing Crawford's versus the Zou Fedora winner. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't know. A lot of people have a problem with it, but I think you're just picking nits. The guy's moving up to a fourth division to chase greatness, to fight the best guy in the division. I mean, he wanted Charlo and they pretty much ruined their lives. He had to wait around to see if Spence wanted to do the rematch. It put him on the shelf for a year, which in hindsight's probably not like the greatest deal to sign, where you have to wait around if you're going to whoop the guy to figure out if he still wants to be a boxer. Which brings me into Errol Spence. Rumor has it that Errol Spence and Derek James have parted ways. Spence sent some cryptic tweets over the weekend, and there is rumors in Rumorville that Derek James took down the Errol Spence swag and memorabilia and effigies in his gym. So it looks like Spence tweeted like, "I need a new home." It's kind of weird to me. I don't know what's gone on in the last year. If Derek James is like, "You know what? I've moved on. You're not seriously training," or Spence had a problem with Derek James' game plan against Crawford, or maybe his game plan in a few fights leading up to that, and then it came to a head with the Crawford fight, or Spence thinks he just needs a new look. I mean, there could be a myriad of things. It could be one guy's declining to train another guy because he says you faded, the car accident affected you. I don't want to see you hurt out there. I don't know. I'm just pontificating now. I'm just making stuff up. So none of what I said is confirmed. Again, this is rumors and innuendo, so to speak, that Errol Spence and Derek James have parted ways. It's a long time partnership. Derek James has really become a famous, so to speak, a famous trainer because of Errol Spence. And James has a few big fights coming up. He trains Ryan Garcia. He trains Frank Martin. So he's got some maybe just didn't have room for Spence. I don't know. I really don't know what's going on. I think we'll eventually find out. And I mean, this does happen. Guys do leave their longtime trainers. If the longtime trainer doesn't have time for him anymore, or they start to have some sort of disagreement over training practices. If sometimes guys outgrow their trainers, I don't know. But again, all the best to Derek James. We'll keep you guys posted on what's in store for Errol Spence. And then lastly, shout out to Roberto Duran. Apparently, he was having some heart issues, was hospitalized, and they've put in a pacemaker. You know, Duran's top five dead or alive on my list all time. Just hope he gets well. He's become later in life a lot less of, or just a, and I can't believe what a savage that guy was in the 70s and 80s to what he's become as a, I guess you could say an elderly gentleman. He's 75 years old. He's just appears to be an affable, gentle guy now. I've had the pleasure of meeting him a couple times and just couldn't be friendlier. So shout out to Roberto Duran and again, get well soon. Just jump right into the last weekend. Really, really, really interesting DAZN fight. Again, this was, I left it off the list and Vinny insisted we put it on the list, and for good reason. The Dalton Smith Jose Cepeda fight was a lot of fun. I gotta say, I'm pretty impressed with Dalton Smith. We didn't know what kind of pop he'd have against a real guy. He fought a real guy in Jose Cepeda. Vegas didn't know what kind of pop he'd have because the over under was 10.5. So they thought Cepeda would survive. Cepeda did not survive. Dalton Smith, with an incredible body shot, floored Cepeda in the fifth and stopped him. And Cepeda is a tough guy. Tons of metal, tons and tons, but a lot of wear and tear, a lot of hard fights. He was stopped by Ruguru in the 12th, and now stopped by Dalton Smith with a body shot in the fifth. It seemed to be a matter of when Dalton Smith wanted to put his foot on the gas. The first few rounds, it appeared he was trying to feel his way through the fight. Didn't want to get caught by a potentially dangerous guy in Cepeda. And by the fifth round, I think his corner told him, step on the gas a little bit here. He did, and that was all she wrote. He was landing some really, really heavy leather up top before that. He landed a couple of really good headshots that dazed Cepeda. And then he went downstairs. He kind of like, I don't want to say lunged in, but he threw a really hard shot, got both feet and legs behind it, and right on the liver, and boom, that was all she wrote. Cepeda dropped to his knees, head went down onto the canvas and he couldn't beat the count. I want to see Dalton Smith. This was like a coming out party. I'd like to see him make some noise outside of England. He's someone I would like to watch again. I was happy with what we saw. I was happy with, you know, the way he went about the fight. He wasn't greedy, took his time. And again, Zepeda's a real guy. So this is a good knockout. Right hand to the body was vicious. It was a straight right. It was a real nice shot. He set it up with a jab up top, came down low, and boom. Like I said, that was it. Zepeda dropped to his knees. And this isn't, you know, a knock on Zepeda, but I think maybe it's time to start to figure out what you want to do. I think that Ivan Baranchuk fight, where, I mean, they just traded knockdowns in 2020. That's the kind of fight that, I mean, he rattled off like four wins after that, but then he gets in and got knocked out in the 11th by Progre, not the 12th, excuse me. But he had a tough fight with Progre. Then a tough fight with Richardson Hitchens. I mean, Hitchens, that was like a shellacking. It wasn't even close. It was definitely a fight maybe where guys don't necessarily recover from. And what I mean by that is not necessarily like the beating they took, a vicious knockout, but the successive beating over 12 rounds is a confidence killer where you can't get off your shots. You can't get off what you're doing. You start to second guess yourself. And I think he's 33, 34 years old. And I think at that age, when you're in a fight with a guy like Hitchens, a young guy, a hungry guy, a guy who's not mentioned with the top names and probably should be, a guy like that is trying to take your career out to make his own career better. And I think Zepeda was, I don't want to say a victim of that, but a product of that. And this is the Zepeda we're seeing. He's got sort of trial horse written all over him at this point. So props to Dalton Smith. Really want to see this guy again. He's a tough customer. Looks to be in great shape. He's definitely on my list of fighters to watch. I love his accent. He gave a good interview afterwards. And they hugged it out. A lot of good sportsmanship in that one. And again, another good DAZN card. DAZN, just the way I like it during the day. I watched it at like, I don't know, 5-6 o'clock here, Eastern Standard Time. Which my partner in recess, hates these dayside fights. I think that they're fantastic. I love it. I have it on around the house, walking around, got the fights on, boom, got them on this TV, got them on my phone, got them over here. I go room to room. I'm watching boxing all day long. Anyway, there wasn't much to talk about last weekend, but we're loaded this weekend. We're loaded starting Friday night. We're starting early. We got a Friday night fights card, and it's going to be headlined by Oscar Valdez and Liam Wilson. Oscar Valdez is never in a bad fight. However, we've sort of the type of style he fights, where it's offense first, defense last. This is a comeback fight with Liam Wilson, after losing to Emmanuel Navarrete. Liam Wilson also lost to Emmanuel Navarrete. So it's, you know, two guys battling it out who lost to the same guy, with a similar guy who defeated him. This should be a fun fight. I think Valdez is the more accomplished fighter, obviously. I think Valdez is the more skilled fighter. I think Valdez is the more seasoned fighter. However, Valdez's style, Valdez's career. He's 33 years old. The style he fights 33 is like 103. How old's Liam Wilson? Liam Wilson's 28. Liam Wilson's 28. He's listed at 5'9". Valdez is, I believe, 5'5". The last time we saw a big discrepancy, yeah, Valdez is 5'5". Last time we saw a big discrepancy in height like this, it turned out to be a terrible fight with what's his name? Ray Vargas and Nick Ball. That was a more egregious height difference, but this is still going to be 4 inches. Again, this is on Friday night, but I think Valdez is going to come to make a statement. This is an ESPN fight. He's a top ranked guy. I think he's going to get busy. Win, lose, or draw, I think Valdez is going to obviously goes out on his shield. And this is in Glendale. So I think they're going to be outside. I love that. Watching the outside fights. This is going to be in Arizona. So it's a stateside affair. Should be a ton of Mexican Americans there. Excuse me. I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to pick Valdez by decision. Let me see what the odds are here. So bear with me, guys. But I'm going to go ahead and pick Valdez by decision. Valdez is a guy who oftentimes he can box beautifully and chooses not to. He gets drawn into brawls and he gets excited where he just starts throwing like windmill punches. Oscar Valdez, Liam Wilson. All right. You know, and he can kind of get greedy and then can get caught on the other side of that. But I'm thinking that it's going to be a fight where Valdez will show his superiority in terms of, like I said before, a more seasoned veteran, a better boxer, more skilled boxer, a guy with a, you know, after what I just said, I can't really say he's got a great boxing IQ, but again, he can be drawn into fights, but I have a feeling the old man here, the old man being Valdez, I think he's going to pull this one out. Again, I can't find the odds in terms of an over-under. Anyway, moving on. On that card, which is loaded on Friday night, you got Senecia Estrada and Yocasta Valle. This is women strawweights. I think this is for like all the belts in their division. They have also Raymond Muratala and Ogzalazani Nangeni. I don't even know how to say that. 10 rounds at lightweight. Lindolfo Delgado and Carlos Sanchez at junior welter. And of course, Richard Torres, Dennis Haynesworth, heavyweights. Richard Torres was an Olympian. He's fun to watch. All energy. He's sort of at this day and age, an undersized heavyweight. But he looks like, I don't want to say the bad guy in an 80s movie. He just looks like a guy in an 80s movie. He's got just the mustache, the Latin afro. He's a fun watch and he's all energy, mauler. A lot of fun watching Torres. And it's an 8-rounder at heavy. So guys, tune in Friday night. So I got Valdez beating Liam Wilson. I don't think, again, I think there's levels. I think it might be close at first, but I think Valdez will separate himself if he hasn't fallen too much in terms of age, in terms of overcoming defeats. And I think he'll get right back in the mix of contender status if he looks good on this showing. Currently ranked 7th in the division at junior lightweight, 130 pounds. So he can get himself right back in the top 5 here and vie for a title shot either later in the year or early next year. I'm thinking later this year if he looks good. But again, guys, tune in Friday night. More importantly, or less importantly, or more, I'm more excited about is the first Prime pay-per-view So PBC, as we all know, has gone from Showtime and landed on Amazon. It's a sign of the times. We're getting more and more sports on these streaming platforms, more and more movies, obviously. That's always been, but television shows, documentaries, anything you could think of are on these streaming platforms. So why should sports be any different? We watch things on DAZN. We watch ESPN Plus. We watch ESPN, the app. This is just more of the future, more of what we'll see. And, you know, we got a, I guess you want to call it a loaded card. It's a pretty loaded card. We got four fights that I thought were worthy of talking about. We got the comeback of Erislandy Lara. He's facing Michael Zarafa of Australia. Now, Erislandy Lara, former world champion at 154 pounds, highly skilled Cuban fighter, not in a bad fight, will mix it up. This is at middleweight. The WBA world title is, I don't know how, but that's at stake. Zarafa, I don't know. He's an Australian guy. He's orthodox. Lara is a southpaw. Zarafa's a little bit bigger. Again, Lara is now, what do they have him as an age? I mean, we got to go on his American age, and then we got to go on his Cuban age. I think Lara is like 38 or something. Or maybe he's in, how old is Erislandy Lara? Hold on. Erislandy Lara. Okay, Lara's 40. He's 40. He'll be 41 in April. Yeah. So this is, you know, he hasn't fought in, I think, 2 years. Let me see when his last fight was. I should have researched this. What am I doing? Usually Pazzi's good with this. Yeah, he fought Spike O'Sullivan in May of 2022. He knocked him out in eight, or stopped him in eight. So he's fighting Zarafa. Zarafa has losses to the likes of Jeff Horn. Let's see. He lost to Jeff Horn in 2019. And then he went on and beat an old ancient Anthony Mundine like a year and a half later. Silveni Nawai, Isaac Hardman. Again, I don't know who these guys are. And Danilo Creedy? Yeah. I don't know. Guys ranked like 200th in the division. Aussie. Sorry, Aussies. These guys aren't top middles. So I don't think that that's much of a litmus test about what he's going to do with Lara. However, we don't know what the fuck Lara's going to do. Guy's coming off a 2-year loss. He's listed at 40, which means he's 70. He's had rough and tough fights. He's for some reason making a comeback at this point. I hope he has all his faculties. I honestly, this is to me a pick'em. Even though Lara is moving up and fighting what appears to be a fresher Zarafa, it's Erislandy Lara. And just historically or career-wise, way more skilled than Zarafa could even dream of. But he can also get drawn into very boring fights where the judges don't like the Cuban style. And he's sort of an exception to the rule in terms of the Cuban style. Lara will give you more looks than that, and he'll get into firefights where we've seen other Cubans kind of go the other way. And then, of course, we've seen recently not that. We have, you know, Robesi Ramirez, who's, you know, coming off a loss, but he's very exciting. We just saw years back, we saw Sullivan Barrera. He mixed it up and didn't fight Cuban style. So where Lara can kind of do both and kind of, you know, mixed in both. I'm going to go ahead and say Lara is going to take a decision here. it's going to be a split decision, not controversial split decision. I don't think this is going to be your fight of the night. I think this might put some people to sleep just on Lara's age. And I mean, this is what PBC's got. They got guys on the shelf. They got to find someone to fill out a card, and they got Arislandi Lara. Next on the list, as a replacement for the main event, due to Keith Thurman dropping out, Sebastian Fandora gets moved to the main event, leaving Serhii Bohachuk without a dance partner, and the durable Brian Mendoza, who knocked out Sebastian Fandora, subsequently loses to Tim Tszyu. He gets a spot on this card. Mendoza's the guy who disrupted the initial Tszyu Fandora clash. And I'm glad to see him get a fight. So I think he's in for a tough fight. Bohachuk, who I'm not too familiar with, was put in there to, you know, give Fandora some work. Again, Mendoza gets on a card, gets a payday. I think this guy has a day job. I think I remember them saying that. Mendoza's got, I mean, he's ranked in the top 10 in the division. He's got good wins against, obviously, the aforementioned Fandora, Jason Rosario. Him and Arislandi Lara share a victory over Cornflake LaManna. Anyway, I think we see a really good fight. Mendoza lost to the guy who I thought beat Erickson Lubin, Jesus Ramos. But let's see if Mendoza can come back after he stood tough with Tim Tszyu. Bohachuk, I think that's how you say his name. He's Ukrainian. He's 28 years old, 6 foot. He lost to Brandon Adams. Adams is an American fighter who in 2019 lost to Jermall Charlo. That was Adams' last fight. So I don't know what's been going on with him for the last 3 years. Anyway, with that said, I think Mendoza will win this fight. I think Mendoza gets right back in the mix with a big win here. Mendoza's tough. Mendoza, we've seen he can take a shot, give a shot. Stood tough with Tim Tszyu over 12 rounds. This should be a lot of fun, this fight. I think that this is going to be the sleeper of the card. His opponent, again, who was supposed to fight Fandora, he was knocked out or stopped by Brandon Adams, but he's rattled off 5 wins within the distance since then. And everybody he's beat, with the exception of his comeback fight, has a winning record. again, I think I actually think Mendoza, I'm gonna change my pick here. I think Mendoza's gonna stop him. I think Mendoza's gonna stop this guy. I think Mendoza's gonna get right back in the mix. I don't know where he goes from here in that division. It's certainly not gonna get a Tszyu rematch. Not that he deserves it, but there are guys in the division. Again, Virgil Ortiz is making his way up. He'll be on a card shortly, Golden Boy card. So his name's in the mix. Again, the division is you got guys like Erickson Lubin, Jermall Charlo, if he can ever get it together, Magomed Kurbanov, who just lost to Israel Madrimov. You got guys in that division. So we'll see what happens with Mendoza after that, but I think Mendoza's going to win. I think he's going to look good. I think it's a good comeback fight for him. The co-feature or main undercard for this fight is two guys that have made a career now looking halfway decent in fights with Tank Davis. And that's Rolly Romero and Isaac Cruz. Rolly, if you remember, Rolly, Rolly, Rolly. Rolly is like the clown prince, the unintentional clown prince of boxing. I can't tell if this is like a work. I can't tell if this guy takes himself serious. I can't tell if it's sometimes it's serious, sometimes it's a work. Whatever the case is, Romero is in the news oftentimes for sound bites. He does say some funny shit, but he's been in trouble in the past. None of that matters now. He's fighting Isaac Cruz. He's talking crazy shit about Cruz. Cruz is all business, but Cruz, in my opinion, has gotten on cards based on the fact that he looked good against a one-handed Tank. He went 12 with Tank, and Tank famously said after the fight that he wouldn't grant him a rematch. In fact, I think he said, like, hell no. People took that as, you know, Tank is now ducking him. I just don't think that there's money in it for Tank. Not that that matters. That was almost 3 years ago. So after that, Cruz fought Yuriorkis Gamboa, Eduardo Ramirez, and fought Giovanni Cabrera, who he didn't look great against. In fact, he looked shitty against. So we got, he's fighting Rolly on Saturday. Rolly's a hard-hitting, I don't know, maybe the least skilled world champion I've ever seen in any division. He's literally a hard puncher. That's it. His last fight, Jesus Christ, that was almost a year ago. His last fight was last May against Ismael Barroso, where I don't know anybody in or out of boxing who doesn't think that that fight was stopped prematurely. Barroso was winning the fight. Rolly knocks him down. And that was Tony Weeks. And Tony Weeks made a weird statement after it that he judges fighters differently based on their age, which isn't fair and just ridiculous. So we got Rolly, Isaac Cruz. Rolly's got him in about 4 inches in height and 7 inches in reach. Cruz is 3 years younger. And this should be, this can't be a boring fight. I can't imagine this being a boring fight. Rolly's not good enough to stink it out. And the only thing that Rolly does well is come forward. He cannot fight going backwards. So I think that's why he looked good in the beginning against Tank. Tank doesn't throw a lot of punches in the beginning of the fight. Rolly coming forward, looking aggressive, was able to get away with it. Once Tank turned it on, he turned Rolly's lights out. Rolly didn't know where the fuck he was after that fight, after that knockout. Rolly is a face-first brawler. However, Cruz has never taken a step back in his career either. So I don't know if Cruz can get the leverage, but I expect him to be underneath Rolly's shots with the height disadvantage, working Rolly's body, eventually breaking him down and going up top. Cruz is almost a 3-1 favorite in this fight. And for good reason. Rolly's not good. He's not a good fighter. He's a hard puncher. He's not a good fighter. And again, these are relative terms, people. We've seen Rolly get stopped by one of the best pound-for-pound punchers in the game. So I'm sure Hank can probably turn most guys in or around his weights lights out at any given time. He turned Rolly's lights out, that's for sure. I'm actually going to go out on a limb here and say that Cruz stops Romero in the ninth. I don't think Romero is going to do well with Cruz's work rate. I think that Cruz isn't a guy who can get bullied. Rolly's a classic bully. He's got to bully his opponent. And then he starts to like to land shots. But again, he's got a very awkward, wide open style that I think that Cruz can get inside on, work the body, and eventually work his way up top and hurt Rolly. I think he'll continue to hurt him throughout the first half of the fight. And I think the last three or four rounds that this fight lasts, which is will be into the ninth, I think it's going to be all Cruz, and I just think it's going to be a systematic breakdown. I just don't think Rowley's got any defense, footwork, or anything to stay away from the smaller Cruz. I don't think his jab will be effective. A guy like Cruz, I think you have to stay at mid-range and jab away and neutralize, use your reach to neutralize his aggression. Use your jab to neutralize his aggression. Keep him off of you with the jab and movement. And I don't think Rowley's got a good enough jab and or movement to keep Cruz off him. I think Cruz is going to be on him like smell on shit. I think he's going to be inside of Rowley's wide shots. I think Cruz will be working the body, again, systematically breaking him down in what we've referred to on the show, but of course we didn't come up with it. You know, the Mexican style of your offense is your best defense. You know, just constant punch, 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 touching him and getting him to drop his hands and go up top. And Rowley will, if he does get stopped, will probably say it was some sort of premature early stoppage. That's Rowley's style. That's the way he rolls. That's the way he rolls, so to speak. But I don't see Rowley getting out of there with a W. I don't see Rowley getting out of the fight. I don't see it going the distance. Like I said, Cruz is a 3-1, close to a 3-1 favorite. I think it's like 285. He's minus 285. So, again, we're not going to do a Billy Betts segment this week. We'll reserve that for next week. We'll find out how Billy did with the gambling. But I'm putting it at a ninth round, either stoppage or referee or corner stoppage. I think Rowley, I don't think he's going to get knocked out. I think he's going to get stopped. I think Cruz is going to grind him down, and that's how he'll end the fight. Should be fun while it lasts. I hope you guys are going to enjoy these fights. We're going out, same deal, place I tell you guys about all the time. They host the best fights. We have a great time. I think there's going to be a decent group of us there. I'll post some pics on my social medias. The main event for Saturday's inaugural Prime PPV, due to Keith Thurman, as we announced last week, dropping out of this fight due to, a biceps injury or something. Sebastian Fundora, who's already on the card, gets elevated to the main event status against Tim Zhu. He went through a camp not preparing for Tim Zhu. Tim Zhu went through a camp not preparing for Sebastian Fundora. So it's even money on my side of things. So I don't think that'll have anything to do with it. This should be fun while it lasts. Both guys are pretty aggressive. Fundora, for his height, 6'5", guys. 6'5", 154 pounds. And apparently I heard an interview with him the other day. He does not suck weight to make 54. If you believe that, I don't know. But from what he said, he has to eat and gain weight to get to 54. So he's got some sort of, what appears to be some sort of metabolism issue. I don't know. I've never heard of anything like that. But here we are. Fundora, 6'5", does not utilize his height and stays in the pocket. His style plays into Tim Zhu's offense. Tim Zhu is a guy who stays in the pocket, throws a lot of punches. He works angles. He works the body. He goes up top. He punches in or around your guard. You can't hold a high guard. He counters well. When he wants to jab and remembers to jab, he throws a fantastic jab. He's not the most fleet of foot guy, but he's always in good position. He's always in good position for defense and good position for offense. We've seen him dropped against Charles Conwell, but he recovered. It was more like a flash knockdown, got up, and did well. That was in his American debut, his debut on USA, on US soil. This is going to be fun while it lasts, guys. I think this is going to be an all-action card. This is the type of card that PBC needed. This is the type of fight PBC needed. I believe that this is a better fight than what was originally slated, which was Tim Zhu, Keith Thurman. I think Keith Thurman would have been overmatched weight-wise and the people would have been critical of that. I don't see this fight going the distance. I don't see Vandora lasting 12 rounds. If he does, I'll be surprised. I got Zhu by 7th round stoppage. I'll be honest with you guys. I think this is only going to be close in the beginning. I think Tim Zhu's on a mission to cement his name. I think there's a huge fight on the horizon with Terrence Crawford, which could be just an absolute career-defining fight for Zhu. And a career-defining fight, another career-defining fight for Crawford. So I don't see destiny being upended in terms of Vandora upsetting Tim Zhu. Again, I think it might be a good close first couple rounds. The advantages that Vandora has in terms of height, he neutralizes it and doesn't use his height, doesn't stay on the outside picking away with the jab like you'd expect a guy that big, you know, throwing the right hand behind the jab. Doesn't do any of that. Gets dragged into fights and fights at close range, thus neutralizing his fight, much in the same vein of Paul Williams used to do the same thing, just a 6'2" welterweight, and would fight like a little guy, you know. It's good for us fans, I guess, but I don't see, like I said, the style of this fight going beyond, I don't think, it's, oh, what did I say, 7? Yeah, I'm going to say he's going to stop him in the 7th round. That's what I think is going to happen. And for some reason, I can't find odds for this. There we go. All right. Susie, obviously a huge favorite. Sebastian Vandora is plus 380. So again, this is it's almost like he's like a 4-1. Zhu's like a 4-1 favorite. I have a feeling, like I said, I think this is going to be like a slaughter, to be honest with you. I think it's going to be bad over seven rounds. I think it's better. I still think it's better than the Keith Thurman fight, but I think Fundora's style is a big target, not particularly fleet of foot. Zhu's going to be all over him. And again, to make a statement, Fundora's as tough as they come. He's going to try to hang in there, and I think he'll have some moments. But ultimately, I think that this is going to end in a stoppage in the 7th round. So, you know, hang on to your, just enjoy the fights. I don't really have too much more to say about it other than this is definitely going to set the table for Zhu Crawford, which will obviously be like a mega fight and they'll promote it as such. And I mean, this is like PBC's like last things that they're going to hang on to. So, they have to do well with these fights for Prime. And I think the team is like the Showtime team. I think it's going to be like Brian Custer hosting, Mauro Ranallo, Abner Mares. I think that's going to round out the roster. I heard Al Bernstein has gone over to DAZN. He's going to call fights on DAZN. So I don't think he's going to be part of this former Showtime staff, which is now matriculated over to Prime. By the way, this is for the WBO and WBC, so this is a unifier. WBC was vacant. That was, Fedora was going to fight Bohacek for that, and then I believe that they were going to try to throw him in the mix. Vandora, if he expected to beat Bohacek, grab a belt, and then he'd be in the mix. But this just sort of cuts that out of the way, makes this a unifier. Tim Zhu, and I don't think that the WBO approved Keith Thurman as a 154-pounder because of the long layoff, no experience at the weight. So they weren't actually sanctioning that fight. So Zhu's WBO wasn't going to be on the line. It's now on the line. It makes that, I guess, I guess, more attractive. It's a better way to sell the fight. Again, you go from no belts at stake to a unifier against a real 154-pound guy. I'll take it. So again, guys, tune in. Amazon Prime, Saturday. I'll be watching at the main event with a bunch of heads. Like I said, I think I'll throw some stuff up on the stories. You guys comment there. We don't have a Billy Betts segment tonight, but we do have mail. We do have mail. And again, doing this all by myself, guys, so bear with me. I know it's boring when it's just me. Anyway, we got first of our titled, These Conlon Brothers Stink. This is from our friend Tyler Nolan. What's up, Tyler? He's Pazzy picks Billy Betts and Brendan Longshot. I like it. He says, one, KOTB is the best boxing podcast out there. No time constraints or agendas, just good boxing dialogue. Thanks, Tyler. Appreciate it. Appreciate the kind words. And, you know, we'll keep trying to bring you guys weekly episodes. And we'll do our best with that. He says, for Usyk versus Fury, what does a win from either guy over the other do for each other, do for each of their legacies? Keep up the good work. Tyler from Connecticut. All right, Tyler. I spent a lot of time in Connecticut. I lived in New Haven for 4 years when I was at Southern. Well, I think Usyk's legacy is cemented. He's got two wins over AJ. He's one of the greatest cruiserweights of all time. He's an Olympic gold medalist. He's a heavyweight world champion. His legacy, he could never win a fight again, and he's a Hall of Fame fighter. So this would only increase his legacy, and we'd have to start putting him in arguably with some of the greatest big men of all time. And, you know, by all time, I mean, you know, top 20, top 25. If he knocks off Fury, beat AJ twice, this is huge. This is like Evander Holyfield status. Not as significant yet as Holyfield, but shit, damn close. And at least for our era, it's a close call. Usyk he cements himself as an all-time great, not just a generational great. Fury. What can we say? What more can we say about Fury? Three huge wins. Some of the most lucrative fights in history. British heavyweight champion. But he's a real heavyweight. He's listed at whatever they say he is, 6'9". Anywhere from like 250 to 300 plus pounds. But he'd be beating the best boxer of his career, the most skilled boxer of his career. So it can only be positive for his legacy, right? Because right now he's sitting on three Deontay Wilder wins as his best wins, okay? The more and more Deontay Wilder starts to either be inactive and or not look great, that cheapens Fury's legacy. I've stated multiple times that how can we elevate Fury if we denigrate Wilder, right? Like his best wins over a guy we say isn't great or is one dimensional. So Usyk to me, career wise, has the better career. This would only make an already Hall of Fame career that much more memorable, that much more special. Fury, on the other hand, I mean, I guess we'd have to, he would get elected into the Hall of Fame, but I mean, his resume doesn't necessarily elicit Hall of Fame status. So beating the guy who beat AJ would be fantastic for Fury. It would leaps and bounds for his legacy. I hope that answers the questions. All right. We're moving on to our friend Louis Hutton. What's up, Louis? He titles this Dalton Smith. Long-time listener. Thank you, Vinny, Brendan, and of course, Back Alley Billy, a.k.a. Billy Bats, a.k.a. Backroom Billy, for a brilliant run of shows. Accents and quality boxing chat has been brilliant. Thanks for switching me on to Pro Box TV. Absolutely brilliant boxing coverage and fantastic pundits. I agree. Also, guys, we record this on Monday, but Wednesday, Nicholas Walters and Joseph Adorno are going to fight on Pro Box. So should be interesting. Just tune in for that. Always appreciate and love the show. And love you show us British boxing fans and our love you show to us British boxing fans and our boxers. Just wanted to draw your attention to Sheffield's Dalton Smith. He beat Jose Zepeda on Saturday night. Yep, we covered this. He looked shaken in the first two rounds with Zepeda's speed and jab, but his father adjusted his son's range in the third timing. Yep, I agree. His timing started to click in the third. I have watched Dalton smash up everyone at a domestic level. It was good to see him handle a step up. Was keen to hear you guys had seen him, what your thoughts are. As I know, Vinny likes a marauding puncher, and Brendan loves the Sheffield Kell Brook accent. I do. Thanks again for this amazing run we are on. I feel the pod has stepped up a gear in the past months. Keep it up. Official knocker, Louis Hutton. Thanks, Louis. Yeah, we're trying to bring these to you weekly. I think I covered it earlier in the show, but yeah, I concur. I'd love to see Dalton Smith on this side of the pond. I'd really like to see him come over here. The guy looks fit. The guy looks in shape. The guy, again, we got, you know, he's a hard puncher. You liver shots Jose Zepeda, knocks him out. I'm going to hold off on calling him a special fighter. I'm going to hold off on pound for pound talk or anything like that because we're not there. Okay. But that was a huge win for a young guy in Dalton Smith. And I just want to see more of him. We had questioned some of his that we said he had pop last week, but we didn't know about, if that would carry against a real guy. And apparently it has. And if you've seen him smash guys up on a domestic level, I'd like to see him do it on a world level. So Louis, I'm with you, buddy. We're ready for Dalton Smith. And I'd like to see more of him on DAZN. And lastly, we have Andrew Morales with a mailbag question. Hey, Vinny, Brendan, and Billy. What's up, Andrew? With all the talk of Canelo ducking Benavidez, I want to know your thoughts on the meaning of ducking in the sport. The guys over on Pro Box TV recently had a good chat on this specific topic as it applies to Canelo Benavidez, and it made me consider that you don't have to be afraid of another rival opponent to still duck them, particularly as a defending lineal champion in a weight class like Canelo is now. Avoiding a rival for purely business and or timing reasons still constitutes a duck. Emotions don't need to be a factor in this in order to fit the definition. Your thoughts, and thank you for your consistency, AJ. All right, AJ, I wholeheartedly agree. Absolutely. So that's been the talk and the chatter of the last year or so with Benavidez and Canelo. It's now we're now seeing Canelo the businessman, less of Canelo the fighter, right? Much like we saw Floyd Mayweather, the fighter, babyface, not baby. What are we talking about? You know, Money Mayweather. From the, you know, Pretty Boy Floyd, not Babyface, the fuck am I talking about? Pretty Boy Floyd matriculating into Money Mayweather, where he boasted about being a businessman. And yes, a lot of people said he duck fighters, did this, did that. Canelo's looking for $150 million one-time payday, apparently, with Benavidez. I don't know how serious he was when he said that, but he said for $150 million, I'd fight him tomorrow. I don't know if that was like, hey, outfits out there with $150 million, throw that money at us. I signed to this PBC lead balloon over here, and they don't got the fucking bread, even though he's fighting his next fight against Jaime Munguia on PBC. So I don't know. You know, yeah, I don't know what else to say to that. Yeah, you can 100% duck somebody and not necessarily be afraid to fight them. I don't necessarily think these guys are at this level. They're afraid what's going to happen to their sales, not necessarily what's going to happen to to them, that these are fearless men. These are not guys who shy away from confrontation and fighting on a macho level. They may shy away from a potentially dangerous career-ending move on a business level. Risk reward, right? That's how we measure business. If the risk outweighs the reward, it's not worth the risk. So I think that's where we're at with Canelo, and I don't disagree with you, AJ, and I don't disagree with the guys on ProBox. So, well, that ends this this snoozer of a fucking episode. You guys can find me at @I_no_that_kid on Instagram, @TheKillerB24 on Twitter X. Please write us at KEOTBboxing@gmail.com. KEOTBboxing@gmail.com. Also follow us at KEOTBboxing on Instagram. Also look at our YouTube at KEOTB podcast. And guys, remember, it's very, very, very important for you guys to subscribe to the show, to like the show, to review the show, even bad reviews. We don't want bad reviews, but even bad reviews feed the algorithm, make the show more popular, put it to the top of other people's lists. And eventually, you know, we can reap some of the benefits of this. But anyway, I just want to thank you guys for joining me on this ride tonight solo. I hope I did you guys proud. I hope Knocker Nation doesn't roast me too bad on this. But anyway, we'll catch you guys next week after the fights in April 6th. Guys, we're like in fight season right now, so we're getting hot. It's going to be good episodes every week. Every weekend we have great cards. So I look forward to talking to you guys next week. I look forward to responding to you guys on social media. DM me if you have any questions, concerns, otherwise, or just comment, man. Again, love doing this, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Take care. Knock 'em out the box, pass. Knock 'em out.